This morning we are going to be concluding a lesson that we began last Lord's Day morning on Daniel in the Old Testament. We're trying to look at some things about Daniel's character that can help us build a more godly character in our own lives. As I mentioned last Sunday morning, I was originally asked to present these lessons under the title, Daniel, the Power of One. And the idea of those who invited me to present these lessons was that Daniel illustrates how much good can be done by just one person, even if that person has to act alone. And Daniel certainly does illustrate that. There are many times when he had to stand for what was right by himself. And he did a great deal of good, even in those situations where nobody else supported him in the stand that he took. But as I said last Sunday, in order to have that kind of influence, we're going to have something like the character that Daniel had. We all want to have influence, but sometimes we don't want to pay the price of building the kind of character that will have a godly influence on others. And so we began last Sunday to list some things about Daniel's character that were the reason why he was able to do as much good as he was, even when he stood alone. So we talked last week about the fact that he was unwilling to compromise his principles. He was a man of integrity, and he would stand for what was right and not try to bend the rules just because the situation was difficult. We also mentioned the fact that he was a man who, in taking a stand for what was right, could do so with courtesy and fairness. He didn't use being right as an excuse to be obnoxious. He took a stand, but he did so with courtesy and fairness. We also mentioned last week that Daniel shows that godliness works. He didn't just stand for what was right in theory. He put it into practice, and he showed those around him that godliness is not just good, it works. It's effective. When we really put it into practice, it leads to a better life. We talked also about the fact that Daniel was a man of skill and competence and learning. He didn't see godliness as an excuse not to learn the things that would make him successful in this world. He studied and worked hard, and Daniel 6 verse 3 said he distinguished himself among his peers as a man of competence and capability. And then finally last week we talked about the fact that his daily habits helped him. When his faith was tested, he had the benefit of being able to rely upon patterns of conduct that he had been practicing for a long, long time. And so in his case, his habits helped him to be a godly person, but he began making those habits early in life. So this morning, let's think about some other points in regard to Daniel. And I apologize that I, for the last number of lessons, haven't had any PowerPoint slides. If you become dependent on PowerPoint, you've been disappointed with me lately, and I understand that. I've made a resolution to get back to using at least simple PowerPoint slides sometime in the future, all right? But not this morning. In the sixth place, we're going to come out with 10 points. If you're taking notes and you have less than 10 points, you've missed one. So number six would be that Daniel, and I really admire this about Daniel had learned how to be effective in more than one kind of situation. He was a flexible man, an adaptable man, and he could deal with more than one kind of people. I'm afraid sometimes as godly people, we live in such an isolated cocoon and we never really have any significant dealings with anybody who's not just like we are, that our godliness depends upon us always being in a certain set of circumstances. When we're taken out of that set of circumstances, we find many times we don't have the ability to even to talk to or relate to people who are not on the same wavelength as we are. Daniel did better than that. He could deal with many different kinds of people, and one of the amazing things about Daniel is how consistently effective he was through a wide range of culture changes and in changes of administration and kings and empires. Here was Daniel just consistently being godly and being effective and being influential regardless of who he had to deal with. That's an acquired ability. And I very much admire those who are able to do that. His faithfulness didn't depend upon being in any certain set of circumstances. He's going to be who he was, and he had learned how to speak the language, so to speak, of people who spoke a different language. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 18 in the New Testament. Peter talks about those in the first century who were Christians who would have been slaves or servants. And he said that a Christian who was a servant ought to be a good servant, a better servant than they would be if they weren't a Christian. And interestingly, he says in 1 Peter 2 and verse 18, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh." It'd be easy, wouldn't it, to be a good servant to a good master? But it takes a person of a bit more character to be a good servant to a person who's not an easy master, one who's harsh and perverse. And so that simply illustrates the point that Daniel illustrates, and that is that true godliness ought to make us able to be effective servants of the Lord, to do what's right and to do what's effective, even in difficult situations, even when we're dealing with people who come at things from a very different vantage point than we do. There would be no great character that it would take to relate as a godly person if you never had to come in contact with people who thought anything different than you do. But Daniel was effective in many different kinds of situations. Paul in Philippians 2 verse 15 says that we are to shine as lights in a crooked and perverse generation. We need to learn how to deal with and how to have an effective influence on people who are very different than we are. And Daniel certainly illustrates that ability. Some of you know that every week or two I go downtown to Zaki's hot dog stand. I've gotten to know Mike Trigiani, who owns the place quite well. And we have some interesting conversations about spiritual matters. He was raised in Brooklyn, New York, in a very different environment than I grew up in southern Mississippi, I'll tell you. And so we have some very interesting conversations, but his hot dog stand is a kind of a local gathering place there in Germantown, and on a given day there'll be just a motley crew of very different people in there having lunch. And I am just amazed at how different people can be in the world. I'll tell you, the human race has a lot of variety in it. And it's been a test of my character to be who Gary Henry is consistently and effectively in dealing with all of those different kinds of people and the things that come up in conversation and the attitudes that people display about different sorts of things, to be a Daniel, regardless of who's there on a given day, and to be able to relate in some kind of a way to people who are almost foreigners as far as my culture is concerned. I believe Daniel teaches us the importance of being able to be a godly person even in a crooked and perverse generation. But in the next place, I want to suggest that a part of the answer to Daniel's success was that he started young. He had the great advantage of having built up these helpful habits of his from his childhood. He began learning faithfulness to God when he was a very young person. In Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10, when there was now an edict that made it illegal to pray or to petition anybody but the king, the penalty would be death to anybody who would do what Daniel had been doing all of his life, and that is praying to God. It says he went home that day and prayed three times with his windows open toward Jerusalem, as was his custom since early days. Well, that's a great help to be able at Daniel's age to have the advantage of habits that were developed over all of those years. Now, I want to be very careful in what I say about that. I don't want to offend somebody like our beloved Charles Wiles, who only obeyed the gospel at an advanced age. What a remarkable thing that was, that when Charles learned the truth, that he obeyed it even at such an advanced age. And we rejoice about that. Brother Wiles will end his life well, regardless of what he may think about his earlier life. He is doing what you have to do to get to heaven, and that is he's ending well. There's not an effective human life is not effective unless it ends well. And Brother Wiles is ending well. But I believe he would be the first to say that he wishes he had the benefit of habits that he had been developing during all of those years when he was not walking with the Lord. He'd find some things much easier now than they are because he doesn't have the benefit of those. And he would recommend, I think, a young person obeying the gospel and being faithful way before he did that. Well, I just can't overemphasize how valuable godly habits are that are begun in our younger years. If you've got habits that help you go in the right direction, the longer you've had those habits, the more helpful they'll be to you. The more momentum they will give to you in a good direction. So Daniel started doing what's right when he was young and would have done a great deal of good as a young person. We find him as a young man in the first chapter of Daniel when he was among those taken captive to Babylon. A young man in a difficult situation, and at that time he was already showing himself to be the kind of man that he was for the rest of his life, and that is a man who knew what was right, whether he was young or old, whether it was easy or not, that he would do that, and he started doing it when he was young. In the next place, let me suggest that a key to Daniel's success was that he was consistent in his godliness. Integrity means that we are true to our principles, that there's not a disconnect between our principles and the way we live our lives. A person who doesn't have any integrity says he believes one thing, but he lives a whole different way. So there's not any unity of his character. A person of integrity, though, says, here's what I believe, and the way he lives his life proves that that's what he believes. There's a unity, a oneness, as the word integrity means. If you're a mathematician, you know what an integer is. A person who has integrity is a person of oneness or wholeness. There's a unity about his character and his actions. But let me tell you, influence comes from the credibility that you will have as a result of living a consistent life, practicing what you preach, living the kind of life that you say you believe in, caring as much about God as you say you do, letting the evidence that's on record speak for itself. If there's any question about what your convictions are, only all somebody has to do is look at the way that you've lived your life. That kind of consistency is hard to build up and to maintain, and it's very easy to lose. You're a person of integrity, and everybody who knows you knows that there's integrity between your practice and your principles. It won't take but one careless deviation from your principles to destroy that whole thing. It'll take a lifetime to build up a reputation for godly consistency and only one unfortunate lapse to wipe it all away, and you may never be able to get back everything that you've lost. One moment of uncharacteristic behavior will mar a lifetime of good example. And yes, a person may lapse from the Lord and come back and repent and be faithful all over again, but it'd be very difficult ever afterwards for them to have the influence that they would have had they remained consistently true to their principles. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, Paul talked about preaching the word and being instant in season and out of season, the King James said. In terms of Timothy's work as a preacher, that meant preaching the truth, whether it was convenient or not, whether that's what people wanted to hear or not, whether it was in easy circumstances or difficult circumstances. But the principle applies to the living of our whole lives. We're to do what's right consistently, whether it's easy or not, whether we think that will help us in the short term or not. It doesn't take much character to do what's right when the circumstances are easy. Almost anybody can do that. But where we find out whether a person's a Daniel or not is when we see whether we are consistent with our principles. Even when the winds might be blowing strongly against us, we're still going to go ahead in the right direction. In the next place, let me suggest that Daniel's humility was a part of the key to the influence that he had. Powerful influence doesn't come to people who seek to be influential. Have you noticed that? What the Bible calls selfish ambition, the ambition of a person who says, I want to be somebody who everybody knows, and I want to be powerful, I want to be important, I want to be a decision maker whose decisions influence many, many other people. Well, the irony is that a person who has that kind of an attitude, a person who sets out to try to be as, you know, one who influences as many people as possible, usually ends up being less influential in all of the important ways than a person who simply and humbly decides he's going to do what's right and leave influence in the hands of the Lord. Let the Lord supply the influence or not, but I'm going to do what's right, and that's what I'm concerned about. My observation is that among the people that I know, faithful people in the Lord's body, the ones that I know that are the most influential, I mean really and truly influential, are the ones for whom influence has come simply as a byproduct of them being the godly person that they are. They haven't sought the influence. That hasn't been what their lives have been about. It just has come as a result of them living a consistently godly life, as Daniel did. Paul talks about those who preach the gospel through selfish ambition. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 16, he talked about those who preach Christ from selfish ambition, not sincerely, supposing to add affliction to my chains. Many of these men were personal enemies of Paul. They resented the fact that Paul had more influence than they did. They were competitors of his, and they were delighted that now Paul was in prison and he couldn't be out holding any gospel meetings while they could be. And so Paul said, you know, remarkable testimony to Paul's humility, that he could be grateful if other people were hearing the gospel through those competitors, that was good. Paul would rejoice about that, even if those men might end up losing their souls because they were preaching the gospel for the wrong reason. If people were hearing the gospel and obeying it, that was something to be rejoicing about. But here are men who were trying to be as influential as possible and resented anybody that had more influence than they did. And they would do everything they could to undermine his influence so that they could be more influential. Let me tell you, that kind of attitude hasn't gone out of style. Not only among gospel preachers, but among many of the rest of us. It always gives me a queasy feeling when I'm with one of my younger colleagues in the preaching of the gospel. I'm not talking about here. Both of my colleagues at Broadmoor are younger, and so I'm not thinking about them. But in other places, when I meet men who are just starting out to preach, and it becomes obvious in 5 minutes into your first conversation with them that they are wanting to become a big name preacher. They are wanting everybody to know their name. They're wanting their phone to ring regularly and to be asked to come preach here, there, and everywhere. They are wanting to have influence. And they would cloak that by saying, well, I just want to do as much good as possible. But it's obvious that they're motivated by what Paul will call selfish ambition. The crass desire to be known and to be influential. Well, as I say, ironically, people who are motivated by that will end up being less influential than people who just don't worry about whether they're influential or not, just let it come as a byproduct of them doing what a godly person ought to do. It's an understatement to say that the most powerful, influential person who's ever lived in the history of the world was Jesus of Nazareth. None of us will come as close to influencing as many people as he did. But he wasn't guilty of selfish ambition. He was the humblest person who ever lived. And his influence was a byproduct of his godly character. And so we need to be humble, as I think Daniel was. You don't see Daniel ever trying to become important. He was an important man in every empire that he found himself in, but it was a byproduct, not something that he saw. He was a very humble man. But I hasten to add that our humility must be genuine, rather than something that we pretend. I know some very powerful people who have become powerful, widely influential people who have done so by affecting a seemingly humble, folksy way when they're around their brethren. And it's nothing but an act in some cases. And intelligent to know how well the folksy demeanor plays to other people. And they've come to be widely known as being so humble and so lowly minded. When you get to know them a little bit privately, you understand that they're anything but humble. And they want to make sure that you know who they know and what they've done and where they've been. And drop names at every time they get a chance. And just zealous for you to know how important they are. But the minute they're in a group, they affect this humble, folksy attitude. Well, that's fake humility. I believe C.S. Lewis once said, there is nothing any more arrogant than pretended humility. We are never any more proud than when we are striking a pose of being humble. So when I say that Daniel's humility was a part of his effectiveness, please understand that it was genuine humility. It wasn't something that he just pasted on the outside because he knew that that would increase his effectiveness. Finally then, point number 10. And I put this one last deliberately. Daniel was willing for the truth about Daniel to be publicly known. Daniel was a godly man, and he wasn't afraid for anybody to know that that's who Daniel was. And so he did in his life what the Lord said all of his followers must do in the New Testament, in Matthew chapter 10, verses 32 and 33, when he says that we must be willing to confess him. To confess the Lord means to openly admit that we are who we are and not cover up the fact in dangerous situations that we are one of the Lord's people. We're tempted to do that, though, sometimes, aren't we? I'm tempted to do that down at Zacchaeus occasionally when something comes up in the conversation and it turns in sort of an ungodly direction and somebody's using some language that is ungodly. Depending on the group and the situation, the temptation is for Gary Henry just to not say anything for a few minutes. Just to lie low. But that's not confessing the Lord. If the truth of the matter is that I find that kind of language objectionable, then I ought not to be afraid for anybody to know that that's what my convictions are. Rather than to hide temporarily until the storm blows over the fact that I believe certain things. The person who won't stand up and speak up for the Lord when somebody needs to stand up and speak up for the Lord is not one of the Lord's true followers. But it takes courage to do what Daniel consistently did over many years in a variety of very difficult situations. He didn't go out of his way to publicize his convictions, but neither was he afraid for anybody to know who he was or what he was about. On that day in Daniel chapter 6, when it was now illegal to pray, he went home and prayed three times that day. It says, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, as was his custom since early days. I don't get the impression from that verse that Daniel on that day opened his windows just so people could see him pray. The Lord warned about praying to be seen by men. But if the rest of the time when it was safe to pray, he had been praying with his windows open and he wasn't afraid for anybody to know that he was praying, he wasn't going to close his windows on that day just because now it's dangerous. He was going to let the truth about him be known, and the truth happened to be on that day that he was going to pray, even on pain of death, possibly. Well, that's tough to do, I'll tell you, from personal experience. It's tough to always just openly acknowledge who you are, what your convictions are, and that you, yes, are one of the Lord's people. We can't have the kind of influence that Daniel had if we are chameleons, just taking on the colors of whatever our surroundings are. We need, as I said, to be able to relate well to people who are of a different conviction than we are. When our surroundings are hostile to our own convictions, we need to be able to operate effectively not depend for our faithfulness on being in a safe environment. But in those dangerous environments, it's tough to just come clean and let it be known, not hide our faith, but let it be known. Here's the truth about me. Yes, here's what I believe. But as difficult as that is, that's where real influence comes from. I'm leaving our windows open. If that's what we've been doing in the past, then we leave those windows open and we're not ashamed for anybody to know that we're doing something that now on that day might cost us our lives. Ironically, influence doesn't come from trying to be all things to all people, from trying to please everybody. I say ironically because you'd think, because influence comes from people looking to us for advice and looking to us for what we think about a certain subject and willing to be influenced by us, that presumes that they like us enough to let us influence them. We tend not to let ourselves be influenced by people that we don't like, even if they're speaking the truth. And so if we think we want to be influential, many people make the mistake of thinking that the way you become influential is not doing anything that upsets anybody so that everybody likes you and you can influence everybody. That's not where influence comes from, in my experience. Influence comes from consistent godliness and openly confessing the Lord, whether it pleases anybody but the Lord or not. And then as a byproduct, you'll find yourself having the opportunity to influence some people that you might have thought you never would have had any influence with, just because you've let your light shine rather than having covered it up. The more people we try to please, the fewer we will actually influence. And so I suggest to you and to myself that we are all people with a very specific list of particulars. You are who you are. And although you and I may worship the same Lord and have the same convictions about godliness, that plays out a little bit differently in your life than it does mine. We each have different personalities, different personal circumstances. And the Lord intended it to be that way. The Lord didn't intend all of us to be clones of one another. He intends that I be who I am and you to be who you are, and that in whatever circumstances we find ourselves individually or collectively, that we'll be who we are, and that is a person whose only real intent is just to please the Lord and let everything else take its natural course. So I just sum it up by saying you're going to have the influence of a Daniel when you quit worrying about whether you're pleasing everybody or not. And do what he did, and that just stand for what is right. Even though that might seem like that's going to cost you influence. In the long run, even your enemies will be influenced more by you if you'll take a consistent stand for what's right. People respect people of integrity, even if they may disagree with their principles, more than they will allow themselves to be influenced by somebody that they know to be just a chameleon. So Daniel illustrates the power that comes from being a definite person. Somebody said to me not too long ago, "Gary, you are a person of definite opinions." We were talking about food. And I had to admit that that's true. But I suppose I might be accused of having definite ideas and opinions about a lot of other things. But I think as long as we maintain the humility to be correctable when we find that our ideas are wrong and that we're willing to adjust in the direction of truth, there's much more value that comes from being a definite person than from being just a vague general person who really doesn't believe much of anything or take any kind of a definite stand about anything. The word definite has to do with limits. You see the word finite in it. Finite means that which is limited. And so you and I are definite people. We have some limits. I have some characteristics and there's some other characteristics that I don't have. There's some things that I believe and some things that I don't believe. Those are my definite particulars. I need to be able to adjust those in the direction of godliness when repentance is in order. But I need not be afraid of understanding that as a godly person, there are some limits to me. Here is who I am, and over here is who I'm not. Daniel let it be known that he was a definite person. He was specific rather than vague. I was talking just a few weeks ago to a man about my age that I'd gone to school with many, many years ago, college days. At the time that I knew him, he was a very faithful Christian, a man of very definite convictions in regard to the Lord. But in his more mature years, he has left the Lord, not by going back to the world, but by leaving the Lord's people and beginning to work and worship with people who have departed from the Lord. They would think in a more spiritual direction. And I said to him on the phone a couple of weeks ago, I said, what are you now religiously? I said, I used to know a very definite person who had a specific set of convictions. I used to know where you stood and who you were and what you were. What are you now? You know what he said? He kind of chuckled and said, I'm an anything Arian. That's exactly what he is. He's an anything Arian. Nothing definite about any of his convictions now. Whatever anybody wants to believe about anything would be pretty well fine with him. But I'll tell you, he won't have much influence. Anything Arians don't make many converts. So, young people especially, don't be afraid to be who you are. If you've made up your mind that you're one of the Lord's people and you're going to stand for the truth of the Lord, then stand for it. And don't be afraid to be that person in any kind of a situation. I end with Paul's statement about that in the first chapter of Romans, when, as he contemplated going to Rome, a place where he had never been or preached the gospel before, there seems to have been some suspicion among Paul's critics that he was too much of a coward to go to a big city like Rome to preach. Paul, you've been out there in the hinterlands preaching to relatively uneducated people. Bet you wouldn't be so bold if you were in Rome. Well, Paul was planning to go to Rome and preach in Rome. And he said in Romans 1, verse 15, as much as is in me, I am ready to preach the gospel to you who are in Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. For it is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. What's Paul saying there? He's saying, I'm coming to Rome, and I'm going to preach the same gospel in the most sophisticated city of the empire that I preach anyplace else. I will preach the gospel in Rome or anywhere. Well, there's a definite person, a specific person, a very clearly defined characteristics in regard to God. And I appreciate that attitude. I hope that the same thing will be able to be said about me. There's not any situation you could drop me into where I would be any less inclined to preach the truth than I have been in any other kind of situation, because that's just who I am. I hadn't planned to say this, and here again, it's the danger of these sermons being recorded. I hope this didn't get back to this individual. But I read something about our beloved brother Ed Harrell the other day, a few weeks ago, that so much impressed me. You'll just have to keep this in this room, all right? Ed was asked many years ago to speak at a very impressive scholarly gathering of religious scholars who had done some work in the area of American religious history. And this symposium was on what we would call the Restoration Movement. It was convened to have scholarly papers presented, not by members of the Churches of Christ, but from very respected academics across the spectrum, on what we would call the restoration plea. The basic idea of trying to restore New Testament Christianity and be what New Testament Christians were. So, Brother Harrell, of course, widely respected religious historian in the United States, they decided to have Ed come and not deliver one of the papers at the symposium, but give a concluding speech extemporaneously at the end of the proceedings. And I read that discourse, and tears just came to my eyes. To hear this great brother in the Lord stand up in that kind of a setting, and just as boldly as you could imagine, make the plea for simple New Testament Christianity. He preached those scholars the same kind of sermon he'd preach about that if he were in this building. And the response was astounding. In the printed volume of these lectures, the editor of them mentioned that they'd ask Ed almost as an afterthought to give a concluding speech, but said what Ed Harrell had said was as valuable, if not more so, than anything else that had been presented at that seminar. He's a man of influence. Many people in the Lord's body and outside would sit and listen to what Ed thinks about the subjects in which he has expertise. But he didn't get there by being an anything Arian. He got there by taking a stand, publicly and privately. I believe he's a Daniel. And that's what we all ought to aspire to. Not because influence is involved in that, but because that's what happens when we live godly lives. We find the Lord putting opportunities in our path to influence that we wouldn't have had if we had hid our lampstand under a bushel basket so that nobody could see who we are. So let's be Daniels. Let's stand courageously and consistently live godly lives. Put it in the Lord's hands, and who knows what good might be done, even if we're the only one doing that in the world. May God help us to be that way. If you are here this morning and we can assist you in obeying the Lord's gospel in any kind of a way, if you've never become a Christian, to do that you must obey the New Testament. You must believe that Jesus is the Christ, be willing to confess that publicly, repent of your sins, and be baptized for the forgiveness of those sins into Jesus Christ. If you've never done that, everything is ready for us to assist you with that initial obedience this morning. If there's some other way, if you become a Christian but you become unfaithful and you would desire our prayers and our encouragement, then the invitation is for you as well. If we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?
When Jesus comes to reward his servants, whether it be new or die, faithful to him will he find us.